Can't you see it? The world powered by solar and renewable energy. Here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's Breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
You're about to hear a quite familiar voice to Clevelanders. You remember him from his time as Cleveland.com, Ohio State and recruiting expert, also of The Athletic. Now he covers college football for On3 Sports to talk Ohio State, Oregon, 5 p.m. tomorrow at the Rose Bowl on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. It's Ari Wasserman. Ari, welcome back to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, it's great to have you here. As we kind of get started here, we've talked throughout the day how we're feeling about this game. I had no vibes going into the Tennessee game, and I think John was on the same page. I'm pretty confident about Ohio State's ability not just to keep this competitive, but also have a chance to win this and maybe make a championship run here. Are you confident that Ohio State's going to be as competitive in this game as they were in the first matchup against Oregon?
Yeah, well, like, the thing that's interesting about this Ohio State season and the way that it's played out is that heading into the college football playoff, it was like such a bad place for the program, you know, having lost to Michigan the way that they did, and all the discourse that was surrounding the team, you know, as it pertains to Ryan Day and his future there, that you wondered if that was such a death blow that they wouldn't be able to get up off the mat. And what you saw was a team that went out and played its game against the Tennessee that, frankly, just, you know, wasn't in a place from a roster perspective to compete against that. So now Ohio State, the analysis of it isn't just, well, is this team just mentally broken or just broken, period, after what happened with Michigan? You're past that now, and now it's just about football, and they're playing the best team in college football. So, you know, as it pertains to competing with them, I think that that is a no-brainer, yes, you know, especially considering the fact that they're a, you know, field goal or a 2.5-point favorite. You know, the question now is, does Ohio State maintain the way that they called the game, you know, from a coaching perspective against Tennessee, and whether or not the teams that are out there are equipped to compete with it? Now, if there's any team that can beat Ohio State straight up with Ohio State playing its best game, it's Oregon. I believe that they've already done that to a certain extent. Ohio State played, you know, the second best game of their season at Oregon and lost. So, like, you know, when it comes to, like, can they win the game and win the national title? You know, the answer is a resounding yes. Like, could they lose tomorrow? Absolutely. You know, and it's going to be what I anticipate is the matchup of the playoffs. And, you know, I don't think it's quite as simple as it was when it was against Georgia a few years ago, or it was winner of that game goes on to win the title, because there's still a lot of talented teams left, and this is a more grueling path to the championship. But if you're an Ohio State fan, considering where they were in late November and where they are now, you probably have to be delighted about their opportunity to go out and show something against Oregon and maybe, you know, advance and do something big.
Yeah, Ari, I'm interested in the how in this one, because in the Tennessee game, obviously they opened up the passing game more, and Jeremiah Smith was awesome. But Oregon allowed 292 yards on the ground in the Big Ten title game. Like Penn State was able to get after him through the run game, and I don't know if that's necessarily what Ohio State wants to do after what you saw the success with Tennessee is, but it's not like Judkins and Henderson are any slouches either.
For sure. Well, I mean, I think that's the thing that you have to wonder is Ohio State's offensive line up to the task? And, you know, from all standards that we've come to expect after what we saw at the end of the year, like, they did really well against Tennessee. Like, Tennessee's defensive line is very, very good, and I don't know if they had very many pressures in that game and, you know, didn't really impact the quarterback at all. Now, Oregon's defensive line is very good, and I guess you can run on them, but Ohio State, you know, I don't know if you can fall back into the trap of, like, we're going to outrun the opponent and get back, you know, to winning games that way. I think the thing that made the Tennessee game so satisfying for Ohio State fans to watch is that Ohio State just finally embraced who they are, didn't try to beat Michigan at who they are. They, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And just kind of threw it all over the place. And like, I'm not saying that Ohio State doesn't use the run. They are usually a 50-50 team, and I think they have been for most of the year. But I think that Ohio State, when at its best, is relying on the pass in very critical situations to move the football, and then using the run as a complement when teams are on their heels or when they're trying to sock a game away in the second half. Like, I don't know, like, if you're going into this game wondering if Ohio State's going to run the ball 35 times for 275 yards and just run their way through them. Like, that's not who they are. And that's not who they've been, and frankly speaking, don't think that's how they should call the game. I think they should call the game by taking shots downfield to Jeremiah Smith. I think they should call the game by throwing laterally and getting their athletes in space. And then when the defense is spreading out, using, you know, Trey Henderson and Judkins to hit home runs through the middle, you know, when that defense may be weak or not expecting it as much. So, like, that to me is who Ohio State is. And I think part of the reason why Ohio State lost the Michigan game is because they didn't play who they are. You know, statistically speaking, if you go back and look, I think they even threw the ball more times against Michigan than they did against Tennessee, but the way they threw it was different. They, you know, it's not just, you know, box scores, you know, run totals and pass totals. It's how do you approach the game? How do you throw it? When do you throw it? And what the routes look like when you do throw it? Like, you can throw it a yard and still be a really good team. It doesn't have to be deep shots. Like, you just have to rely on who you are. And, you know, the hope, if I'm an Ohio State fan, is that if Ohio State goes out into this game and plays unapologetically who they are, and by doing so, you know, wins or loses, but at least you don't have that taste in your mouth of like, well, the coaching staff just didn't put them in the best position, because the best position is throwing to their four and five receivers that cannot be covered by anybody in the country.
Ari, one take, and a take that I tend to agree with, is that this is the toughest matchup left for Ohio State. Do you agree with that, or do you think, whether it's Texas, Georgia, or anybody else, that there are tougher matchups for Ohio State to win later in the bracket?
No, I think that this is the toughest, and I think that this is the toughest for anybody, because I believe that Oregon has proven and deserves to be viewed as the number one team in the country. It's the only team that went wire to wire without losing this year in a season, frankly, where everybody was losing games that they shouldn't have lost, and that talent gap between you know, the best teams in the country and the middle tier teams, and you know, in the 5 to 15 range, aren't quite as big as they've been in the past. That said, Ohio State is the most talented team in college football, and there's no question. It's not even a debate. So, like, and you look at the matchup, it's like, yeah, this is going to be a very difficult matchup for Ohio State because of who they're playing. But Oregon got kind of jobbed here with the way that the seeding worked out, too, because Oregon shouldn't have to be playing their first playoff game in Pasadena against Ohio State. So, you know, I think that in years past, this would feel kind of like the national championship game to me. But with Georgia still out there and Penn State and Texas still out there, there's going to be big games down the pike. But I don't know if there's going to be a tougher matchup for Ohio State. Because you want to know what the real thing is, and I'm just going to say it. Ohio State and Oregon are the only two teams left in the entire playoff that have, like, elite-level lethal receivers. And, like, if Ohio State plays the game they played against Tennessee, like, Tennessee just was not equipped from a talent perspective to keep up with that. Like, the only team left in the college football playoff that is going to be able to drop 40 on Ohio State's defense is the team they're playing tomorrow. So, like, from that standpoint, yes. And I think the reason why Ohio State and Oregon are the favorites are because they're the ones that can score a bunch of points on everybody, because everybody's got really good defenses. So, like, for me, you've got the two best offensive teams playing each other in a tournament that's really based on great defenses, and those two offensive teams also happen to have great defenses. So, you know, long-winded answer to your question, I think, yes, it is the toughest test that they have remaining, but also don't think it's the only game that they could lose. So, you know, Ohio State has to go out there and play their game, take care of business, and do their best to potentially put themselves in a position to win that game. And, of course, there's going to be more games to go. But if they get through Oregon, you probably feel pretty good as an Ohio State fan in their quest to potentially win the national title this year.
And what's the coaching advantage between Ryan Day and Dan Lanning?
It's interesting, because, like, I'm obsessed with Dan Lanning. I love – the thing that I love about Dan Lanning isn't – you know, it's twofold. One, it's he has done a good job building the roster into an elite level, you know, outfit there. Like, they have really good players all over the field. And, you know, in years past, even going back to 10 years ago, when I was covering the Oregon-Ohio State national title game, like, they just weren't athletically equipped to play with Ohio State 10 years ago. And maybe for much of the past decade, they weren't. But through the portal and through elite-level recruiting, Lanning has built that team, as well as, you know, some of the Georgia teams that he helped coach to a title. And I think that that is a huge aspect of why Oregon not only is lost, but are in the position that they're in. But the second thing I love about Dan Lanning, and it's my number one criticism of Ohio State, is he always has something up his sleeve. He's always doing something that they've worked on that you haven't seen yet. They always hit you in a moment where you're not sure something's coming. They go for it and trust their players in high leverage moments. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But, like, even if you go back, and not to criticize Ryan Day, you know, after what they did against Tennessee, but, like, did he do anything new or different or risky or anything in the Michigan game? Like, when's the last time Ohio State came out and ran a play where it was like, wow, where the hell was that? Like, I don't even know. You'd have to go back years for me to remember one that's, like, actually that stood out. And I'm not saying, like, different formations or pre-snap shifts or, you know, new designs. I know that they're coaches and they do those things. But, like, you know, the snap that on the fake in the SEC championship game that you saw with Arch Manning under center and the ball going through the quarterback's legs to get the first down. Like Ohio State always has a talent advantage, but I don't know that they always try to do the thing outside of just relying on that talent, which is scheming up a scheme or a play or a package or something that the opponent doesn't see coming. And I think that Dan Lanning does that really well. So, you know, as much as Ryan Day deserves a lot of respect for what they did against Tennessee, I also don't know that he's out of the doghouse in terms of what went on against Michigan for the last 4 years or losing big games, you know, repeatedly over the course of the past four. I know they've been close, and I know that, you know, they're a field goal away from beating Georgia, and, you know, I know the script. But, you know, Dan Lanning seems to be breaking through right now to be considered one of the best coaches in the entire country. And, like, I would give the edge to Oregon in that regard. Like, I think Ohio State's going to come out and do what it does. But, like, if you're expecting them to run a Ted Ginn tight end, you know, pass over the, you know, middle that no one sees coming, like in the 06 Michigan game or something like that. Like, we just haven't seen Ohio State do that. And I don't know why, because they're really smart and they've got really great players and a great coaching staff. But, you know, Lanning, I just feel like, you know, even like the thing that they did in the first, and I'm sorry if I'm going long-winded, but the first game, like, you know, having 12 men on the field on purpose, it's like the guy always has an ace up his sleeve. There's always an ace in the hole. And I just don't know that I feel that way about Ohio State. So we'll see what we get on January 1st. But that's my thought process as it pertains to the coaching advantage.
Ari, looking to the Final Four, what are the four teams you think make it out of the next 2 days?
I think Ohio State's going to win, but I would not be very certain of that. I think Notre Dame is going to beat Georgia. I think Texas is going to beat Arizona State, and I think that Penn State will beat Boise here in an hour.
All right. That is
concise. Those are my four. I don't know. I've been long-winded. I don't know how long the spot is. But like, it's just,
you're fine. You're fine.
And we'll see. Like, I don't know. Like, I have questions about all three of the other teams, and the winner of the Ohio State-Oregon game I think is going to be the most complete team. And it is kind of cool that they're playing in the Rose Bowl in a traditional Big Ten, Pac-12 type feel game. I think it's kind of crappy that they're playing so early. Like, it seems to me like this would be a good national title game, but it doesn't matter because you have to win that game eventually, so why not now? I just – Georgia has a quarterback issue. Penn State has no receivers. Texas has been very sporadic on offense. Like, the teams that I think are going to advance to the finals – or at least the semifinals, I should say, all have inherent weaknesses that you can spot from a mile away. I don't know if that's true about Ohio State and Oregon. So if whoever wins the Rose Bowl, I think should feel really good about their spot and potentially winning the championship. And I can't wait to see Penn State and what they do tonight. And, of course, if Boise or Arizona State or somebody can show us something. But the most controversial pick there is Notre Dame, because everybody thinks Georgia's just going to win. And I've watched Notre Dame pretty closely this year, and they're really good. So we'll see what happens. But super excited about these quarterfinals and what we might get here going into the next week.
So I know you hinted at something like this earlier, but if Ryan Day loses this game, in particularly in an ugly fashion, do you think all of a sudden those Coach Ryan Day rumors start to heat up and maybe become a reality?
What does ugly fashion look like to you?
More than 10 points.
I mean, if Ohio State plays a competitive game, and they're down by 7 with 5 minutes left and throw a pick six or something, like, I mean, that's not ugly to me. Like, that's just losing to a better team, probably. I don't know. I don't think Ohio State's going to fire the man, okay? So the question is, and I don't know if they lost 42-10 if they would fire him. I think that the question is whether or not the Michigan game looms large enough for you or for the people who make these decisions. And you have an athletic director in Ross Bjork who isn't from Ohio and isn't indoctrinated into this rivalry. I don't know how somebody in his position could fire somebody with Ryan Day's record. I don't think that is going to happen. And, I mean, I don't know if it should. But the thing that sticks out to me more than anything is, like, Ryan Day isn't the wrong coach for Ohio State because of the Oregon game, no matter what happens, right? And I don't think that they're going to lose by a lot. If they lose, it'll be a close game like the first one. They played a nearly identical game the first time. He's being judged ultimately through the lens of the Michigan game. And I know that that was a month ago or whatever it was, but, like, that is it. It's not like, oh, wow, Ohio State can't match up athletically with Oregon, because he's done 85% of the job the perfect way, right? Like, he's a great, you know, steward of the program. He's a nice man, and they recruit like hell, and they have amazing players. Like, that is the hardest part of the job, right? Putting together a roster that's good enough to play with anybody, and Ohio State does that repeatedly under him. The thing that keeps me up when thinking about Ohio State is that, you know, living 10 years there and covering that team, I understand emphatically how important it is to beat Michigan. And the way they lost to Michigan this year was such a bad loss from a coaching perspective that it makes me wonder if there is a mental block there that's too big to overcome for him. Like, that is my – it's like he was sitting next to me. I'd look him square in the eye, and I'd just be like, what the hell happened? Like, I still think that that was one of the most bizarre games and one of the worst losses in Ohio State history. So, like, in this new system, it's not like it's 2006 anymore, where if you lose the game of the century, you don't get to play in the national title game anymore. And it is a very bizarre position to be in where it's like, Ohio State is coming off of maybe the worst loss in program history, and we're talking about whether or not they're going to win the national title. Like, that is a new phenomenon. And, like, you have to poll Ohio State fans and ask, like, if you think that the coach at Ohio State can be successful ultimately overall if they have a problem against Michigan. And part of that is Michigan is good, and part of that is Michigan has won the national title last year and has proven to be a tough out. But this year was so absolutely awful that it makes you question how could they get to a dark enough place to allow that to happen. So, like, that to me is like a off-season, two-hour podcast, five times a week type discussion and not like a radio spot. Like, I think he will be the head coach there next year because I know him, and I don't think that he would just ultimately, like, walk away on his own. And I don't think he's going to get fired. So, like, the Oregon game is like, you know, I hear this national championship or bust or whatever. And it's like, okay, you know, they paid $20 million for the roster and, you know, they had expected to make a deep run into this thing and whatever. But, like, what are we talking about when we're talking about Ryan Day's future at Ohio State? We're not talking about Oregon. We're not talking about the national title this year. We're talking about his inability to beat Michigan. And, like, that to me, with the new athletic director and all that stuff, is really what it comes down to, and whether or not Ohio State can live with that and whether he can get off the schneid there. Because, like, they're going to be tougher next year too, guys. Like, Michigan's better next year. Ohio State's on the road and probably way worse than they are now. Unless they have another heroic portal haul that I don't see coming. I don't even know who they would get to match what they did last year. It's going to get harder. So, like, they might lose five in a row. And, you know, I don't want to put that out there, you know, 24 hours before they kick off in a quarterfinal game. But, like, if you want to have a big discussion about Ryan Day, it's like, well, what do you think is going to happen next year if they couldn't beat that team with this team this year when Michigan's much better and Ohio State is, you know, unquestionably not as well. I mean, Ohio State's going to be good, but are they going to be great again? I don't think so. So we'll see. We'll see what happens. But, like, I don't know if, like, my decision making as it pertains to Ryan Day and his future and what and like how I view it is going to change at all based on what happens against the best team in the country that isn't Michigan.
Ari, great stuff as always, buddy. Appreciate you and enjoy the next couple days here. A lot of great football action hopefully on the way. And again, happy New Year's to you and yours.
Yep, you as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much. Ari Wasserman on 3 Sports on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Comprehensive. From Ari, we react to it on Ohio State next on 92.3 The Fan. I like that he's at his Tim Brando phase of his career, where it's just wind him up and let him go.
Yeah, he's very good
like
at it.
In Charlotte.
Again, only a few people can do that.
In Charlotte, I would interview Tim. He was like a regular. He's like once a week.
Yeah.
And you get two questions in with Tim.
Yeah, but with Tim
and
Brando, you're like, let's do this.
And he'd just go, and it was like a Lord of the Rings. Like it'd be a long journey, but you'd get there.
Yeah, yeah,
you'd throw that ring into the mountain. You know what I mean?
Well, it's funny. I was thinking during the interview, I was like, if this was a podcast, I'd 100% listen to it because I want Ari's thoughts on this. Yeah. Like, this is good. But two things that were interesting. One, the idea that Ross Bjork might not understand the Michigan rivalry is 100% a real development that Ohio State fans have to part into the Ryan Day equation. Because like we always ask ourselves, what matters more to an Ohio State fan, beating Michigan or a national title? Ross Bjork 100% is in the win a national title camp, and it's not even close. The other
thing...
Which,
by the way, I do not want that as the AD. Like, it's bad enough to have a head coach that doesn't get the rivalry and forces it. Now to have the face of the rivalry, the face of the entire sports program not get it, oh, that's going to trickle down.
I mean, there's just zero chance. Like, you can be a great college football fan, and you can do everything around the sport and still not completely understand that until you actually live here or around it.
But here's the thing. What's wild is Ryan Day's been there for 7 years, and he still doesn't really get it.
Yeah.
He gets how other people feel about it, but he has not internalized it. Is Ross Bjork going to be the same thing? Because if so,
I mean
that gets bleak real quick.
What I know for certain is there's no way he's picked it up in the short time he's been here,
like,
right?
When it no longer matters if Ohio State hockey beats Michigan hockey, and it no longer matters if Ohio State basketball or women's basketball or any of the sports, it's just a rivalry. I'll be honest, you really want to get some people to pull their funding real quick and get people to fire a lot of people. That's how you do it. I still don't know how this guy got his job.
Well, because he did it at Texas A&M, and there's just not a million people that have had those big high-powered jobs, and so it just all recycles. It's like being a CEO.
But
why do you think the CEO of Adidas is the guy that used to be the CEO of Starbucks, that used to be the guy? You know, it's the same environment.
But whether it was Andy Geiger, whether it was Gene Smith, like they have had, both of those have a AD tree that is replete with good candidates. I mean, we're 3, 4, 5, 6 amounts of candidates who've been wildly successful at Power 5 jobs that have experience. This dude, I don't know you can say his job is a success in any of the places he's been other than he's raised a lot of money. I mean,
maybe they look at those.
Does that just matter more than actually the ability to hire and foster winning cultures?
I think people did look at what he did at Texas A&M in that way, because the boosters at A&M, I mean, it was talked about in college football circles, the amount of money that they were able to get.
Yeah,
but I look at it like it's Texas and there's money everywhere
course,
in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I think other people looked at it like, wow, he generated how much money over there? Anyway,
the Power 5 guy generated a lot of money in a football crazy state. Whoa!
Think about how much money Texas had. They just spent so much on SMU to make them relevant. There's money everywhere
in
Texas.
The ACC literally bought their way into the ACC.
Oil money's a real, real thing in Texas.
I just need to break me off a piece of that oil.
There's money, everywhere
just a
there.
Little
the
bit.
State is massive, but there's money everywhere.
1% of that oil money, and you're never working again. You're in Tahiti.
And they care about football in a way that is ridiculous.
And then just come out and occasionally go, Roll Tide!
That's Alabama.
Yeah, okay, but some people from Texas also went to Alabama. You know what I was making a generalization. Just because they're from Texas doesn't mean they just love Texas programs.
You just wanted to say Roll Tide. It's okay.
I did. It felt good.
I always think of that commercial. Man, he was a virgin until he was 28. Now look at him, Roll Tide. The other part that I thought was interesting is if Ryan Day had a hard time against Michigan, Michigan's not going to get any easier next year. They've not only have the number one quarterback in the country, but like if you couldn't beat Michigan this year, why is Ross Bjork thinking that he could beat him next year?
Yeah, and not just that. Another thing that Ari said is you're not running back the same team next year. Meaning, you're still going to be good, and you're going to reload, but next year you effectively become who Michigan is this year. It's going to be a new starting quarterback. almost every weapon other than Jeremiah Smith, a meaningful weapon, is off to the NFL. I don't know. I mean, they've got a couple offensive linemen in the portal, so that gives me a little bit of hope. Oh, and by the way, about half your defense is going to the NFL as well.
Yeah, and they did get in the portal. I know they landed a couple guys, and they were pretty happy about that. And then the tight end is coming back as well.
Is G. Scott coming back? Or, you're talking about there was a Purdue tight end.
Yeah. There's a couple things, but you're right. Jeremiah Smith is back. You're going to need a new quarterback, though. It's going to be a brand new team.
Just win a national championship. Just do it. Just beat Oregon tomorrow. And just because here's the thing, it just alleviates all the pressure.
It'll take everything off of Ryan Day, but I do think there is something to the idea that if they beat Oregon, I don't think Texas is the cakewalk that a lot of people are thinking that it might be. I just don't feel that way. What's the scenario if they beat Oregon and then lose to Texas, when after that game tomorrow, if you're a fan of Oregon, you think you won the title, and if you're a fan of Ohio State, you think you just won the title?
I think if you get to the third round of the playoffs, I think you're going to be fine. Because I think you're going to say, well, you went 1-1 against Oregon, so you in some ways reclaimed your Big Ten superiority because you won last and you advanced farther into the playoffs. And honestly, you went as far as we could expect you to go, and maybe then we'll accept that Texas is a good enough team, right? Do you think that it becomes fait accompli in Ohio State fans, if they win this game?
I think if Ohio State fans, if they win this game,
moving goalposts,
they're just going to talk about that you have to win the title now. You're supposed to win the title. And then they'd probably end up being like a 4 or 5 point favorite against Texas. And if you lose that game, it will be perceived as a massive letdown.
All right, guys, we're going to continue on with this. But I'm just curious where you guys are in the importance of tomorrow's game and the direction of this organization. And whether you think Ryan Day's still coaching for his job, in case we missed it, next on 92.3 The Fan.